This is an interview with Mr. Stennis for the Youngstown State University Oral History Anniversary Project by Jerry Bakunowski at Youngstown State University Todd Hall on November 19, 1997. Mr. Stennis, what was YSU like when you attended for your first undergraduate degree?
Okay, at YSU, when I started in 1966, just coming out of the United States Navy, of course, it was a much smaller campus physically, and as well as in terms of students, in terms of staff and faculty. The university has grown considerably in terms in both regards, faculty and students, and in terms of programs and that kind of thing. The atmosphere was cordial. Jones Hall was the center of things, today it's not so. Jones Hall is not so much the center of things. You know, I'd say Kilcawley Center is probably more the center of things now. But at that time, Jones Hall was the center, and I can remember a lady by the name of Mary B. Smith. God bless her; she's still alive. She was, in essence, to a lot of people, in a lot of our minds, the president, because our presence was felt all over Jones Hall. You know, I mean, when Mary spoke, people moved, things happened. You know, and I was talking to her not too long ago, and I told her, she laughed. You know, when I reminded her of that. She was the registrar, by the way, you know, and so registration was a big part of campus life because it was so hectic and strenuous. You know, we had to go here, go there. Everything was done by paper. You know, computers were not around then. And she was a big influence on a lot of people, but very stern, very direct, very forceful at times, but also very cordial, very friendly. I mean, she was not a person that you feared. You just you wanted to do things right when she asked you to do things. Okay, and my first class was after I got registered. Well, by the way, I registered late because my military time was extended by a month. I was supposed to get out in late August or early September, but they extended it. I forgot. I think it has something to do with the Vietnam war situation. They needed more military people to stay on for longer periods of time, maybe because they were not getting people to volunteer, you know, as they needed. So I stayed on a little bit longer, and I came. We were on semesters then. That's one big difference, and it's kind of ironic that we started on semesters. I mean, the university was on semesters when I started, and about 30 years after, we considered going on semesters again. So when I came, I think I started in October. The court had already started. For either real late September or early October, I started, and the quarter had already started. The semester had already started. So I had a little anxiety because just coming out of military duty and starting college just like that, you know, I was a little apprehensive. I can remember some of my early classes were. At least one of my earliest classes was over in a building called Lincoln Towers, I believe. It was an old hotel, maybe Lincoln Hotel or Lincoln Towers. It was located where the College of Business Administration is located now, and it was down in the basement. It was kind of dark and dreary. You know, students used to joke a lot about. You know, what kind of creatures might creep out in front of you, you know, if you weren't careful. And then I remember I had a social science class. That was one of the courses that everybody had to take, social science. I don't know if they still call them social science now or not. But everybody had to take social science, two social science courses, two communications courses. I think they probably call them freshman comp now, you know, classes. But there were three then. I don't know how many you take now. And I can remember I felt very comfortable in my communications classes because I had lots of things to talk about. I traveled the world, if you will. And a lot of the kids who were just out of high school or maybe, you know, are certainly at least a lot younger than me, maybe not all, some were non-trads, I'm sure, not non-traditional students as I was, but most were considerably younger than me. I think I was, if I recall correctly, I was about 23 when I came out of the military and joined and started taking classes here. But I, you know, I used my experiences in the military, experiences overseas in Morocco and Puerto Rico and Spain, to talk a lot about in the oral part of my communications classes. I think I'll stop there because you want to ask some other questions.
No, that's okay. Can you describe your role as a student activist and what type of organizations you participated in at YSU?
Okay. I was not a member, a formal member of any organization. I was involved in some of the groups that met informally. There was a peace group. I don't recall the exact name of the group, but Dr. Alice Budge, who was a professor of English, she retired just last year. She and her former husband were among the leaders, and there was another professor who was in history. I don't recall his name, but some of the old time professors in history might recall his name. They were leaders of the peace movement, and it was not only a peace movement, anti-war. The group was not only against the war, but they were also favored racial reconciliation. You know, the races being able to be in more harmony with each other and cooperate with each other and have dialogue with each other. So that was an informal group. We met for coffee and discussions from time to time, and there was a demonstration against the war on campus, the first anti-war demonstration on maybe the first demonstration of any kind was when the university decided to let a part-time history professor by the name of Ron Daniels go. YSU had very few black faculty members then, and they let him go. He was part-time, and a lot of the black students were upset. So I think that might have been the very first demonstration of any kind on the YSU campus when the black students and some white students joined the black students. And now we have an organization on campus now called the Pan-African Student Organization, I believe. It wasn't called that back then. I think it was called the Black Student Union. There again, I was not a member, a formal member of that group, but I was certainly in solidarity with that group. You know, I marched with them to protest the university's release of Ron Daniels, and of course I marched with the other group in protest against the Vietnam War. Vietnam was a very hot item on all campuses at that time, and while she was kind of slow to join the movement, but there was a movement here, and there was I didn't march in the march downtown, but there was a big march downtown. It was joined by a lot of people from YSU, you know, faculty and students, and there were a number of speeches given by faculty members who were sympathetic to students who opposed the war, and that was the kind of thing that was going on at that time.
What were your personal reasons for involvement or solidarity, as you call it, with these institutions or groups?
Well, of course, I grew up in the South. I was born in Arkansas, and I had gone through the ordeal in Little Rock, Arkansas, the Little Rock school desegregation crisis back in 1957. So I'd had some personal experiences with, my life had been affected by what happened in Little Rock, because the governor closed the schools for a year, and I didn't go to school. I should have graduated in 61, but I graduated in 1962. After coming here in my senior year, I graduated from East High School. And so I had a lot of, emotional baggage, if you will, a lot of feelings, a lot of strong feelings about the need for the country to become more, treat its minority population better. Mainly its black population, as well as other minorities too, of course, the black population being the largest minority group in the country. Of course, you got to remember the civil rights movement was still raging at that time. In 1964, the Congress had passed a public accommodations law whereby people could go to restaurant counters. They didn't have to go any longer to separate restaurant counters or separate restrooms, or they could patronize hotels and swimming pools or whatever. So that had been a big step. That much had been accomplished in the South, but there was still a lot of agitation for additional change in the South. So the civil rights movement was very much alive then. Of course, while I was a student, 2 years after I started here, Dr. Martin Luther King was slain in Memphis, and that just sort of threw a stick in the wheel, if you will, of the civil rights movement. And that, of course, the civil rights movement has never been the same since Dr. King's death, but there was still a lot of agitation to get more things done in terms of equality for blacks and other minorities at that time. Yeah, so that was the atmosphere. That was the environment that I grew up in. I was influenced by I was affected by the civil rights movement. I was influenced by it, and so that was the attitude that I had at that time, and I still have. I still think the country has a lot to do and accomplish in the way of improving the quality of life for blacks in particular and other minorities.
Was there any differences between your education in the South and your education in the Youngstown area and YSU?
Well, I think the difference here is when I came to, let's go back to East High School. The difference there was, of course, in the South, my education was all segregated. Black people went to all black schools, and white people went to all white schools. I think that was the main difference. And I think the quality was different simply because white people were the majority, and they saw to it that, they got all the things that they needed. They didn't necessarily, because of the attitudes, didn't necessarily care that black people were taken care of in an adequate way in terms of programs, in terms of being up to date on the different tools used for educating, and the training levels for teachers and so forth. It was just more a political thing. If you're in charge, you're gonna make sure, unless somebody tells you, maybe it's kind of a human thing. Whoever's in charge is going to make sure that they're taken care of, their group is taken care of, and unless they're very humane, or unless they're very empathetic, or very have the capacity to reach out to others, the others unless there's a law that says they have to, and you know, the other group just does not get equal treatment. And that's what happened in the South, whereas, you know, the law here said that everybody had to be treated equal. I mean, you cannot separate people according to race, you know, with regards to getting an education and so forth. That was the key difference. And so I think, therefore, the quality, the opportunity was better. So therefore, you know, when I seized the opportunity, I was able to get the quality. You know, there I could not seize, I could not, did not have opportunity to get quality. We got the best in segregated schools, but, you know, that was not always as good as other, as it were in the white schools, you know, simply because of the racial situation. Whereas here, that was not a problem. You know, once I got access to, you know, I applied to the university, I was accepted, I had the same opportunity as white kids. The only difference is my preparation was not as good, simply because, you know, I had not always had the best opportunity, you know, in the South. You know, I mean, it's sometimes the teachers did not have the best training, sometimes we didn't have the best equipment, sometimes we didn't have the latest textbooks, or sometimes, you know, there just was a gulf between what was happening in the white community and what was happening in the black community. But that was, there was not that kind of a gulf here. You know, I was able to get access. You know, it was up to me, after that, after getting access, to take advantage and to capitalize or seize the opportunity or further my education. And it was tough, because I can remember I was not a good high school student. Where I grew up, family background, my mother was single parent. She left my dad when when I was six, and you know, we were on welfare and everything. So I mean, I can remember a lot of times going to school hungry, and so I was not the best. I didn't do the best in high school. So my preparation was not the greatest for coming to college, but the perseverance is what helped me to succeed as much as I have, not only in going to college, but also in the workplace. You know, I was determined that I wanted to succeed, you know, in the Navy, in the military. My advancement there, you know, it's you know, personal perseverance probably helped me as much as anything. You know, once the doors were open, I, having been denied opportunity in the South, you know, I said, once the doors open, there's just no way that I'm not going to walk through those doors. When they passed the GI Bill, when I was in the Navy, I said, here I have a chance to go to college. I never dreamed of going to college. You know, I said, doggone it, I'm going to go. If they let me in the door, I'm going to make it somehow. I'm going to succeed. So a lot of it comes from my own personal desire to achieve and accomplish things.
After you graduated from YSU, where did you go? Did you immediately apply for a position here? Did you go elsewhere originally?
When I came out of the Navy, I worked part-time while going to YSU. My first job after coming out of the Navy was in the steel mill, the dirtiest, most stinking, in a sense, degrading kind of work that I've ever done. You know, when I would come, I worked in the 40-inch rolling mill at Republic Steel, that's down off of Center Street. I would come out, I worked 311, I can remember. Of course, I worked some other shifts too. I only worked there 6 months before they laid me off. Of course, things were kind of depressed in the steel industry at the time. But when I would come out, I would have, you know, smudge all over my hands and my eyes and my ears and my nose. It would take a half hour to get cleaned up before I could get dressed and go home. So I did not have a lot of regret when they laid me off, you know. And of course, later on they called me back, but I didn't go back. You know, I had taken another job as a, you know, I worked as a pipe coater in a plant in Girard. It's not closed. I worked as a cashier at National Cash Research Company in Newcastle. I worked in a dormitory out at what used to be a vocational school out at the Youngstown Airport. It's closed now, but you know, I was a dormitory leader for the boys, you know, who had been dropped out of high school, and they would send them to this vocational school to get training. And so I worked various jobs before I finally got a job. I mean, I was about halfway through my coursework for my bachelor's in business administration here at YSU, which I received in 1973. But I was about halfway that through that coursework when I got a job working, doing similar work, similar to what I did in the Navy. I was a journalist in the Navy. And what journalists do primarily is publish internal communication, like newsletters for the Navy. They write news about members of the Navy and send it back to their hometown newspapers. They do radio news, television news. They do, you know, public relations kind of things, you know. So that's what I had done in the Navy. So eventually, after, you know, about 2 years of college work, I was able to get a similar job at St. E's in the public relations office there. So I worked there 2 years. I went there in 19, after leaving the vocational school after it closed in 1969, I went there to St. E's and I worked for 2 years in public relations. Then, because the Vindicator knew of my work and my writing, you know, I sent a lot of stuff to them from the hospital. They, one of the editors called me up one day and asked me if I wanted to come to work for the Vindicator. I said, sure, it was more money. And so that's, I went to the Vindicator in 1971 and I stayed there for 21 years. So I was first a general assignment reporter, and later I became the religion editor. I was religion editor for about 19 years. I was there a total of 21 years. And then the opportunity opened here, and I came here as news editor in 1992. December, next month, December 1st, will mark my fifth year here as a news editor. So that's pretty much my work history. But in YSU has been, I've been around YSU for over 30 years. You know, I came in 66 and this is 1997, so just about 31 years really I've been around YSU in one way or another. First as a student, and later as doing postgraduate work or covering YSU for the Vindicator. And then more postgraduate work, and then now an employee, you know. So I've been hanging around YSU for at least 31 years.
What type of changes have you seen in YSU since between the student and as a administrator employee as YSU?
Okay, when I came, you know, as I said, it was a relatively small campus. You know, a lot of the buildings that you have now were not in place. I think, if I recall correctly, they had just completed the engineering science building. Todd Hall, where we're sitting right now, was the library. You know, this section, this office space, was probably a classroom. You know, these offices along the northern end were used as classrooms. That area out there was the main body of the library. Kilcawley was pretty much limited to the dormitory section and just another area where you could eat in the eating facilities. You did not have that large area where the bookstore is and all those spaces toward that end. Bigley Center was not in existence. Of course, the stadium was not in existence. Youngstown State played its games at various high school stadiums like Rand or South or Struthers. The Bartlow building was not in existence. What are some of the other buildings? The Bartlow, Kushwa was not in existence. These buildings have all been built since that time. The College of Fine and Performing Arts, Bliss Hall, was not in existence. The parking decks were not in existence. Parking was a big problem at that time. It just wasn't not enough parking space, you know. Getting parking tickets, that was a big item because a lot of people chose not to do the right thing, and they just parked wherever they could, and so there was an officer who went around on his motorcycle or motor scooter and who gave out tickets on a regular basis, and he was a constant source of irritation to a lot of students, and that was a big deal back then. Life was fun back then. I mean, social. There were lots and lots of social activities. The sororities were big. The fraternities were big. They gave lots of social activities, parties, and dances, and they had the different other kinds of fraternal activities. Football was still big. Football and basketball, they were big. I did not attend the games back then because I was just too busy. Like I say, I was, most of the time I was a part-time student, and I worked most of the time. So, and that was the case with most of the students. They were busy. It was we didn't have nearly as many students living on campus back then as we have now. We have much larger commuter population. Of course, as WashU became state, the number of students began, because the university got more money from the state and was able to do more things, create more programs, and develop more facilities and so forth, the student population began to grow. And as we began to grow, sometimes, you know, as I said, problems cropped up, especially with parking. You know, as more students came, and we could not, the university seemed like it could not acquire enough parking space soon enough for the, you know, growing student population. Okay, another change that happened, WashU previously had most of its faculty members with, you know, they did not have terminal degrees like the PhD, you know. The highest level of education that most faculty members had back then was a master's degree. Some, there were any number, quite a few, that had only a bachelor's degree and they taught classes. With the university becoming state, there was a requirement that I believe that, and that's still in effect today, that you had to have at least a master's degree, and at least in most areas, most disciplines, and you had to be seeking or pursuing the terminal degree in your field, the PhD or whatever the other terminal degree is. And so therefore, the university hired a lot more people with, you know, lot greater educational backgrounds. Many more people with doctors came from various areas of the country. And also back then, WashU probably had a disproportionate number of people who were from this area. Most of the people who were faculty members were not from other areas. They were probably from somewhere around this area. You know, if not Youngstown, maybe the Cleveland, Pittsburgh area, not too far away. Whereas when it became a state institution, we began to draw faculty members from a much broader area. And I think that added to the diversity of the university in terms of its thinking, its outlook, its the way it thought of itself as no longer just a local or regional school, but, you know, a school that had appealed to a much larger area. You know, we got a lot more national recognition in terms of the kind of work that faculty was doing with research, with other kinds of recognitions. So those are some of the kinds of changes that have started to take place. Back to the social life, I really do think sororities and fraternities were much bigger on campus back then. I think they made a lot more noise. They made a lot more, got a lot more attention. And I think there was a lot more activism on campus, in general, among students back then. You see activism now, but I mean, it's not quite at the level that it was back then. That was a very activist age. I mean, there, a lot of things were going on. It just had the civil rights movement. The women's movement was probably just in its infancy back then. Of course, the big item was the anti-war movement, you know. And then there was just the growing emphasis on protests in general, on rights, you know, whether it would be, you know, as we have seen later on other movements that came, the gay rights movement, as I said, the feminist movement, any number of movements that were advocating, you know, rights of individuals or groups that grew out of the civil rights movement, you know, and you started to see a lot of this kind of thing on campus, whereas you had not seen it before. So that would be one of the basic changes. That was an era of activism, much more activism than you see today among students, you know, and faculty. I mean, a lot of faculty members were empathetic, if not actually active, empathetic to some of the things, some of the concerns of students back then. You don't see as much interaction between students and faculty members in terms of activism and in terms of causes and that kind of. You see it, you know, but not. I think the level was much greater back then. So those are some of the kinds of changes that have occurred.
You've experienced YSU as not only a minority student, but also as a non-traditional student by enrolling at the age of 23. Mm-hmm. How do you feel that, or hope that, relations with the non-traditional groups, the students, will develop in the future for YSU?
I think that's the outlook is positive. I see a lot more. I think the number of non-traditional students has, if not increased, it's certainly not diminished. Now we always had a good number of non-traditional students who worked, who lived at home and commuted, and you know, of course, a lot of those were younger and probably still are today, even, you know, still within the regular, you know, college age group. But also, you know, we had a relatively good size non-traditional student population back then, but I don't know what the numbers are, but I believe that number might be higher today than it was back then, and for a number of reasons. A lot of people have had to change jobs because of the change in nature of the economy and technology, and a lot of people, you know, with Youngstown being overall economically depressed, a lot of people had to, you know, shift jobs because of layoffs, you know, and just, you know, whole industries almost just pushing people out the door. You know, with steel industry, the, you know, some of the other related industries related to steel, you know, the telephone company, AT&T, you know, just laid off a lot of people, and that was big in this area. So I think YSU relations at YSU between non-trads and trad, traditional students and non-traditional students is basically good, because I think there's always been an understanding here that YSU is that kind of school. This, you know, YSU caters to the community in that regard. And although you have the perception of YSU as a a residence school has changed. I mean, that we're going more toward that, but that's something that has just come in recent times, and that's probably going to increase in the future, from what I understand, as we build more dormitories. But I think the future for non-traditional students here is good. I really do. I think the administration is open to accommodating. We have a center, a center for adult students, or for adult learning, I think. So the university is actually reaching out to the older student, the non-traditional student, the older non-traditional student. We have a lot of students, I think, here are over 40 now, whereas I don't want to go out on a limb and say that's number has increased, but I would venture to say, I would think that number is much higher today than it was in the 60s.
What specific programs, if you had the opportunity, would you hope to initiate to make YSU more visible to non-traditional and minority students, not just regionally, but possibly nationally?
Mm-hmm. Well, I really do think, with regards to minority students, I think there needs to be a more aggressive push on. I really do think we are losing a number of minority students from this area to other universities. I mean, really academically good students academically to other universities, simply because they don't perceive that YSU would be as receptive to them as other institutions. You know, I think YSU needs to make a much more aggressive effort in its recruiting to attract the high academic standings minority students, particularly in the black community. I think we're losing too many of them to other institutions, and they could go right here and get the same quality of education in their hometown. That's one thing that needs to be done, and they need to a lot of knowledge needs to be spread out there in the high school, the inner city high schools, where the black students are located primarily. As far as non-traditional students, I think we're doing about maybe we could make a few more changes here and there, but I think we're really reaching out already to the the older non-traditional students. Like I said, with that student for adult learning center, and I think at one time we even had a daycare center for women who had children to accommodate them. You know, at least that was tried. I don't know how that worked out. The Women's Study Center had set up something where single women with children could leave their children while they attended class. So we've made a number of efforts to reach out to older non-traditional students. And I think the university will continue to do this. If the university sees a need, it will create a program to accommodate them, even more, you know. So I don't know what else we can do there, but I know the university is open, you know, very open to and very receptive to accommodating all students for that matter, but I know especially for the older non-traditional student, because we know that we have more of those students in this area. That is one of the markets that when we do recruit, we try to have appeal to those students. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Earlier, you talked about your position here in relation to the Navy. Mm-hmm. Could you go into more detail as to what you do at YSU?
Okay. Basically, as news editor, it is my responsibility to communicate with the Youngstown community through news releases and through the various mediums in the area. That means radio, newspaper, television. People will submit information to me that they'd like to have a news release done on. Sometimes I'll write the news release myself by, you know, doing interviews or with individuals on campus about programs, events, and so forth. Sometimes I'll have my students, one of my student writers, do the same. Sometimes people will submit information to me, and we'll send that news release to all of the media in the five county area, the key five the counties that YSU is served by. That's Mahoning, Trumbull, Columbiana in Ohio, and Lawrence and Mercer in Pennsylvania. We make sure that news is relevant news about YSU is distributed to those mediums, you know, radio, newspaper, television, magazines, weekly newspapers, whatever, in the five county areas. And so that's the main thing that we do. We also assist with the YSU update. You know, we do some writing for that. We do some help with the editing. And that publication has been expanded. You know, it's larger now. If we were to get more things in, able to use pictures. So I help with that. I also help, you know, when there's a need for a press conference. Sometimes the president will have a press conference to announce a little special program, announce some special event that's occurring at YSU, or to deal with some issue that concerns YSU. We have with all the press conference, all of the press conferences, make sure that we invite all the area media to attend, you know, and we get pretty good cooperation from media. Other things that we do, there is a column that appears in the Vindicator every other Wednesday, and it's written by a faculty member. I coordinate that. I solicit faculty members to write columns. It's called Scholar's View, and that appears every other Wednesday in the Vindicator. Some other things that I do would include, there's a radio program that appear about YSU that's it's on one of the local radio stations. It's the African-American oriented radio station, WGFT. I'm the host for that. It's a 1 hour program every third Monday of the month. It's called Solutions. I do interviews, some of what you're doing right now. I interview someone from YSU about their work and how that work might be helpful to the Youngstown community. Say this last time I interviewed George Hammer, the crime prevention officer for YSU, about his work and in crime prevention. And we invite callers. The first half I ask questions, and the second half we invite callers to call in and ask questions. So those are just some of the various kinds of things that I do. I do other things too. I answer media inquiries. We'll have someone from radio, newspaper, a magazine might call and have a question about something or somebody at YSU. It's my job to make sure that the media person gets the right information, gets the kind of information it needs, and you know. So I do a lot of that. I answer a lot of calls from media. We try to respond to all media calls because we want to have good media relations. We realize public relations is a two-way effort, and that means that we send the information out, but we also allow people to direct questions to us, direct inquiries to us. We want to cooperate with the community. We want the community to cooperate with us. We want to cooperate with media. We want them to cooperate with us. So setting a favorable tone, having favorable relations makes that easier. You know, when we want them to get some message or word out for us, it's a lot easier if we responded when they had questions, when they had stories that they like to do, you know. So we do that a lot. We do lots and lots of that. Those are just some of the things. I'm called on periodically to do other things too, but those are the main things that I'm involved in.
Okay. What would you say would be the most significant obstacle that you've had to overcome while your employment at YSU?
Well, you know, of course, in public relations, you're concerned about image. You know, you try to do image building of the institution through various ways, through communication, through programming, and so forth. The whole university is the best public relations instrument. You know, everybody is a public relations agent, if you will. Students, how the students think about the university, how they talk about the university in the community and with others, how the faculty feels about the university, how the staff feels about the university. So we all are, you know, a public relations people. We the perception that people get from us about the institution is really how the institution is seen by the community at large. Okay. By Youngstown State University being located in the center of the city of Youngstown, and in Youngstown in recent times has had a perception as being, you know, sort of a bit of crime, you know, lots of crimes occurring. So therefore the perception in a lot of people's minds has been that YSU, by the same token, is affected by crime. It's located in Youngstown. There's crime in Youngstown, lots of crime in Youngstown, so therefore there's lots of crime at YSU. People have not been able to separate the two. You know, we have our own police force. We go all out to, you know, have all kinds of crime prevention programs, and, you know, we encourage students to work with the police, faculty, staff to be on watch out and just take general precautions. And so therefore we have a pretty good safety record, or crime prevention record. But the general public just can't get this perception out of their mind that a lot of people think the campus is unsafe, and where, on the other hand, the facts are, you know, the facts show that it is safe. You know, we have been rated the safest campus in the state of Ohio for a number of years. So that's been one of the most difficult things, is to try to erode this perception that YSU is an unsafe campus. And we've tried to do that through various means of communication, through our news releases, through, every time the president, you know, gets a chance to talk about it in a press conference, or every time we get a chance to talk to media if they're inquiring about something that's happening up here. And but we've made some inroads, we've made some progress, but we'd like to make a lot more progress in that area. The perception that YSU is, you know, having a major problem because of its enrollment. We've had enrollment declines, and the media is sort of fed on that. You know, every time the enrollment declines, there's a big story in the newspaper about the decline, and a lot of people, you know, in the newspapers even said, at least the vindicators even said, that this is a major problem for YSU. We see it as a problem, but it's not the major problem that media perceives it to be. You know, all universities have been having a enrollment declines, you know, for a number of reasons. And one of the reasons is the overall number of students who are college age is declining. And we expect that to change at some point, but it's, in recent years it has been declining. So that's the number one problem. Youngstown has had particular problems because of economic decline, and we've also had funding problems from the state. The amount of funding from the state has declined, so therefore we've had to raise our tuition, and that creates a barrier in this area for a lot of students because they can't always afford the tuition. So we'd like to be able to do work better to solve some of those problems, and therefore eradicate this perception that YSU has a major problem simply because the number of students is declining. I think the level of the quality of education has remained.
Problems of obstacles you had to overcome, especially with tuition and enrollment. You were just also talking about how the quality of YSU has not changed.
Right, despite the enrollment. Somehow or another, some people in the media is fed on that perception that, you know, decline in enrollment equals decline in quality of learning, and I don't think that's true. I think the quality is the same. Sure, you have some problems because we're not as big, if we don't have as much funding. Maybe some classes can't be offered, but you know, and some students might have a little few problems here and there and get in the class that they want. That doesn't mean that the quality of education is declining. You know, we just had a little few adjustments problems here and there. But sometimes the media, especially Vindicator, has not been very helpful in that regard. What's happening here is part of what's been happening in the whole Youngstown area. The whole Youngstown area's population has declined. The Vindicator's circulation has declined. You know, there's just been general decline as the population has declined and the economy has declined here. And so we're struggling with the same problems that the rest of the community is struggling with, you know. But I think we're doing a pretty good job overall. I mean, you know, we're still here, and we still are able to do all the things we need to do for our students. We'd like to do better and eradicating that perception of that the university is in decline and so forth. That has been one of the most difficult things, is to fight that perception that the university is in decline and the quality of education is not as good and that kind of thing. You know, it's just simply not true. And the perception that, you know, the campus is not safe, you know, that's simply not true. It is a safe campus. Anybody that's here for any number or any length of time knows that. You know, I mean, relatively speaking, I mean, it's not to say that we don't have problems. Sure, we always have some kind of problem, skirmish, minor problem, but we don't have the major problems that some other universities have had. So that's one of the biggest challenges, to get the word out in both regards, in terms of being a safe campus, being active and vibrant and good quality of education here on this campus.
Could you, for the final question, sir, could you describe how you feel your position, the role that this office plays in the university, will change in the next, say, 10 years?
Well, from what I've seen, it's going to become even more crucial to the life of the university, because image building will become more crucial as we have the need to recruit more students, be more active and progressive in our outlook, in our recruitment outlook, and our just overall outlook. So that's one of the things that our office does. I'm just only one segment of another segment gets involved in advertising, you know, publishing of the various publications that show the, you know, the university, you know, I mean, the kinds of materials that students get, potential students, you know, from high schools and other students are considering YSU as a college, the kind of information that they get in your printed information, the kind of information that the community gets through advertising, the level of advertising has increased very recently. I think it, you know, I don't want to say it will increase even more in the future, but I would think that it would increase more in the future as we become more competitive with institutions like Kent State University, the regional campus over in Trumbull County, as we become more competitive with the campuses like Penn State regional campus in Sharon. This office will become even more important. You know, the name of the office is University Relations, but our main mission is public relations and marketing. And so those two areas, public relations and marketing, will become even more crucial as we enter the 21st century, as we end the 19th century, the 20th century, and as we enter the 21st century, that will become even more, those key things will become even more important. You know, that's the role that our office plays, is you know, public relations and marketing.
Well, on behalf of the Oral History Department, I'd like to say thank you for doing this interview.
Okay. Thanks. I appreciate having the opportunity to talk about my past and YSU's past and YSU's future and hopefully my future.
Well, thank you.
Okay.